This week is the darkest time of our year. This week, in the midst of the month, we're exploring what it means to be a people of hope in the dark. This week that holds the longest night right in the middle of it is the week that I most need to know there is hope, because the darkness outside mirrors my own state of mind. And as we learned last night, that is not necessarily a bad thing. While there is rushing and shopping and jingle bells ringing out there, every fiber of my being wants to curl into a ball and stay in my bed and sleep. I want to find some peace amid all the activity. There's a reason the pagan traditions talk about this as being the time to turn inward, to spend more time in contemplation or meditation, to slow down and huddle in and gather ourselves. I've been doing as much of that as I can this year, but the truth is that it's hard to focus inward when this season holds so many personal hardships for so many people I know and care about, and such a painful and scary time in our nation's history. It feels so natural because of the season, and yet it feels so wrong to turn inward right now, because my presence, all of our presence, is needed now in this time. Hope might be a little hard to find. So Jan Richardson writes about hope, and she writes about it as a thing that springs from our own actions, our sinew, our muscle, our bone, our breath, our beating heart. We are the ones who will bring the peace and the justice that we long for. And I know this. It is the core of this congregation's work. But she also writes, and it is for this day, here now, in this moment that opens to us. This brings to mind for me the words of the American Buddhist nun Pema Chodron in her book, When Things Fall Apart. She writes, "We think that the point is to pass the test or overcome the problem. But the truth is that things don't really get solved. They come together and they fall apart. Then they come together again and fall apart again. It's just like that. The healing," she writes, "comes from their letting there be room for all of this to happen. Room for grief, for relief, for misery, for joy." So for me, there's an intersection here between this active nature of hope and this idea of presence to what's going on inside of us as we're struggling toward that hope. I think about this book that I shared earlier and the idea that peace has to originate in our hearts. I think about it and I wonder, how am I to have peace in my heart when everything around me is in turmoil? And I look closer at this book, as our children did, and as I hope you will after the service. At the page where it says, "For there to be peace in the homes, there must be peace in our hearts." And I see all these drawings that look like they might have been done by children, and lots of activity, and you can get a feel for just the feel of it by looking at it. But I hope you'll look at it a little closer. There's a picture of a person riding something that looks a little bit like a horse. It says, "I feel peaceful." There's a little bubble coming out of his mouth, and he says, "I feel peaceful." There are people holding hands or hugging. There are people on seesaws and people hanging out with pets. Almost every picture is of people doing something. And there's, you know, the obligatory rainbows and flowers as well. And I see that the action, the doing, and the peace go hand in hand. I understand that I need to make room for all of the things that I'm feeling, all of the ways I'm responding to things that are happening to me and to people I love. And I understand that I really can roll with that. That feeling the grief and relief and misery and joy are not the end of the world. That I have the resources to hold those things. And that helps bring me a kind of peace with the healing that Pema Chodron writes about. I can center in knowing myself, knowing my capacity, my own bowl, knowing my relationships, and I can breathe. And that impacts how I am with others. I'm more able to be calm and supportive when I'm needed, and I'm more likely to respond with the active kind of hope when I am holding those actions and those feelings. This is the work of building resilience. And C has a story about that.
So every week I spend at least 4 hours completely steeped in crisis. And that time brings more peace than any yoga or meditation I've ever done. As much as I love those things, they're wonderful. It's better than the best nap I've ever had. Crisis and peace seem like opposites, right? That's what I thought. When I was talking to Reverend Karen about peace and this service, the first thing that came to mind wasn't those 4 hours. I first thought, well, peace is about calm, like the rainbows and the flowers in the book. It's about smooth sailing, reflect, and almost conflict-free uneventfulness. That train of thought, though, didn't really seem to capture what peace is. Peace is like the calm after the storm. We don't really talk about peaceful times except in contrast of war-torn or conflict-ridden ones. Bringing peace is about bringing an end to conflict. At least that's what how I've seen definitions. But peace, it's not really about just large-scale conflict. It matters at a small level, too. Each week, I talk to 20 or more people that reach out to Crisis text hotline, where I volunteer as a crisis counselor. Each of them is going through a crisis in their life. They may be considering death by suicide. They may be in an abusive relationship. They may be bullied at school, or they may be unsure how to come out to their parents. Every crisis is slightly different, and each one of them deserves someone to help them get them to a calmer place. Not to solve their problem, but to someone to help bring them a bit of peace. These are not insignificant happenings, though. Simply talking to me isn't going to fix what they're facing, the devastating place they're in. Talking together instead, these texters and I work to bring a bit of peace. We follow a process outlined in the text lines training. We talk about the problem. We collaboratively discover potential solutions or coping mechanisms, maybe some next steps. And we close our conversation. I'm limited to maybe 45 minutes tops to talk to one person. With the texter's next steps outlined and identified, we're both a little calmer. We both have a way forward through that crisis. And that, to me, feels like we're both at a little more peace. Talking with people in crisis and helping them to a calm place is my way of bringing peace. I'm working to grow peace in others, helping them through their crisis in a place of calm, but in what I consider one of the best possible side effects, peace grows within me as I do this. If I were to focus on bringing down stress in my life, solely working through my own hardships, I absolutely should and could get somewhere with that. I may even find solutions, permanent or temporary. But without this in my life, I would not feel at peace until I found a way to bring peace to others.
Thank you, C. I imagine that there are many of us here this morning that could use a little more peace in our hearts. Am I right? Maybe we're not all in crisis, but there's so much going on. There's so much going on that it can feel, to me at least, like things are falling apart. And things are coming together. And things are falling apart. So many of us are working to help them come back together. I know this is a congregation made of people who really do live our values in our community. And as we do that work to bring peace and justice, I imagine that sometimes we need a little something to remind us of the peace is also available to us. So I want to offer us a way that might help us make room for all those things we're feeling at this time, to acknowledge the things we're struggling with and to offer each other the hope of peace. We've done this exercise once before, and this season of darkness feels like a really good time to do it again. So I'm borrowing this idea from my friends and colleagues, Erica Hewitt and Suzelle Lynch. There's a piece of paper tucked in your order of service that looks like this, that I'd like you to take out. But don't do anything yet. Please find something to write with. There are some pencils scattered about the sanctuary. You can help each other find them or share if you need to. So please don't write your name on your paper. And know that these papers will be exchanged between you. You're going to trade these off to each other. Okay? I'll invite you in a few moments to complete the two sentences that are on your paper, but first I want you to know what will happen to them. So I'll be asking you, after you've written out your sentences, to exchange your paper with others who won't read it until there have been several exchanges, right? And so nobody will know who wrote what, right? But you will know what's been written. They'll be opened eventually, but they won't be read aloud. And I'll go through the process of exchanging after we do the writing. All right? So I will invite you to start by completing the two sentences written on your paper. In my life right now, I'm struggling with, and in that struggle, one thing I hope for is. When you're finished, please fold your paper up and put it down and look up at me so I know you're done. If you are not able or willing to stand and move around the sanctuary, which I'll talk about in just a moment, hold your paper up in the air, and someone will come and take it from you and trade with you. If you are willing and able to stand and move around the sanctuary, I will invite you in just a moment to get up, move around, trade your paper with somebody, and then move on to somebody else and make another trade, and then move on to somebody else and make another trade. Do that two or three times. Don't talk. Please give your partner a smile or a nod of acknowledgement that you are doing this together. And if you see someone holding their paper up, please trade with them. Go. If you haven't already returned to your seat, please make your way that way. So you are now holding someone else's struggle, maybe even yours. That happened last time we did this. You are holding someone else's struggle and their hope. So take a moment to open your paper and read the words. You don't know who wrote these. They could belong to the person you admire most in this community, or the person who annoys you the most. They could have been written by the person sitting next to you, the person behind you, the person you have not gotten a chance to talk with yet. Take these words in. Take a moment to offer up loving kindness to the person who wrote them. And now I'm going to ask you to do homework. Please take this piece of paper with you. Put it somewhere you'll see it during the week. And when you do, imagine that unknown person and their struggle, and send them again some loving kindness. Keep holding the hope for them all week long. If for some reason you don't feel up to doing that, please give me their paper. And I will make it part of my practice this week to hold them. Last night, I closed our winter solstice celebration with a different piece from Jan Richardson. This one ended with these words. This blessing does not mean to take the night away, but it knows its hidden roads, knows the resting spots along the path, knows what it means to travel in the company of a friend. So when this blessing comes, take its hand, get up, set out on the road you cannot see. This is the night when you can trust that any direction you go, you will be walking toward the dawn. Let us walk toward the dawn together, holding each other's hopes in our hearts, and in doing so, being peace for each other and our hurting world. May it be so. May we be so.